Welcome to Come Inside.
Today's guest is Dr. Debbie Joffe Ellis. She's a psychologist and a mental health counsellor. She has a doctorate in alternative medicine from the Indian Board of Alternative Medicine in affiliation with the World Health Organization. She was married to the genius Dr. Albert Ellis, who was the founder and creator of Rational Emotive Behavioral Therapy. She not only has a private practice in New York City, but she also delivers lectures, workshops, and seminars throughout the USA and across the globe. This was easily one of my favorite interviews. I learned so much about myself, but it was also just that little reminder that sometimes we all need. We remember why you are doing this. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think you will too. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
So I guess a good starting point would be, what is REBT?
Okay. Well, rational emotive behavior therapy is the pioneering cognitive approach that heralded in the cognitive revolution in psychotherapy. Before that came along, Freud and psychoanalysis were the lord of therapy.
Yeah.
And that involved a lot of free association and analysing childhood stuff. And it gave some people some realisations and insight. But it didn't really encourage people to take responsibility for creating their own emotions. So my late husband,
Dr. Albert Ellis.
Albert Ellis.
Yeah.
Absolute genius, like literally member of Mensa.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because he developed this, didn't he? He developed REBT, which is extraordinary. Yeah.
He created it. He wanted to help people. He studied psychology, and Freud was the only choice. And, you know, he graduated and he was practicing psychoanalysis. And he said, well, some people feel better after a session. They've talked and all, but they're not getting better. They're not understanding that it's their thinking that's creating their emotion, not their circumstances.
Yeah.
He had a lot of influences. He had read a lot, so Eastern philosophers, Stoic philosophers, others. But he also was a creative genius with a heart of gold. And he was sick from early childhood. And among other things, I think that taught him to cherish life and not to create unnecessary suffering.
Yeah.
And so bit by bit in the early stages of his psychology career, he was developing what was to become rational emotive behavior therapy, REBT, teaching people that it's not circumstances but what we tell ourselves about them that creates our emotions, teaching people that every human has worth just because we exist. There are no good people, there are no evil people. There are people who do good things and people who do evil things. Where there's life, there's the potential to change. So to brand a person as always one or another is just not scientific. And so he brought his genius and the tools he learned himself to cope with his own suffering from childhood onwards and developed REBT. Now, when he first presented it to his colleagues and peers, they booed him. They rejected him. They called him stupid and simplistic.
Wow.
And luckily, he chose to follow his mind and heart and not to care what the other people thought of him. He persisted. I mean, he would listen. Of course, it's important to listen to negative feedback just in case there's something we can learn from. But when it's not constructive, let it go, let it go. Anyway, so I'm giving you such a brief version of the development of REBT because in the interest of time. But that heralded in my husband's approach, REBT, the cognitive revolution, where people didn't need years of therapy, and he wrote 85 books. Even people who didn't want therapy, it was simple enough to read and often apply to oneself if one didn't have serious issues. psychoses and mental illness. But people with who created depression or anxiety or rage or guilt or shame, these are the unhealthy negative emotions, with motivation and practice, some of them help themselves simply by reading his book. So he practiced that. He changed the world of psychotherapy. He changed society. He was also part of the sexual revolution.
Yeah.
And fought for equal rights for women, for gays, for making it legal to have.
He was ahead of his time, wasn't he?
He was a visionary ahead of his time, Chantal.
Yeah.
And, so he helped change societal attitudes, psychotherapy, and healed and probably saved lives of countless people. And his work carries on. My mission is to continue his work, making it relevant for the here and now. And so there you go, a little brief version of the development of REBT.
So how would you explain that it differs from CBT or DBT?
Good question. There are similarities because CBT is based on REBT, and DBT also takes elements. So does acceptance commitment theory. So does positive psychology. So does executive coaching. Now, some of the developers of these sort of newer approaches, newer than REBT, give credit to Ellis, and some don't. Oh, well. In any case, to answer your question, REBT is more philosophical than CBT. REBT certainly equally invites us to think about our thinking, identify irrational thoughts, zap them by disputing them, come up with healthy, rational ones. So both do the same. Again, CBT came 15 years after REBT. And Albert Ellis was a mentor who helped Aaron Beck in some areas of his research on depression. Yeah, Beck gives credit to Ellis. And also, REBT more than CBT. In fact, CBT doesn't specifically do what REBT in emphasizing the importance of unconditional self-acceptance, unconditional other acceptance, and unconditional life acceptance. DBT has some philosophical elements, but they're also different. So in my biased view, REBT is the most holistic, no-nonsense, scientific, evidence-based, compassionate, humanistic approach in the world of psychotherapy.
And what you just listed then, is that what appeals to you about this theory and about this type of therapy?
Yes, Chantel, I love its humanistic nature and that it offers techniques. It doesn't just spout philosophy. It offers some healthy wisdom, but it also gives you the how-to. It's easy to read, you know, books and you feel better for a while, but they don't give you many of them don't give you specific techniques to really examine what am I telling myself to make myself miserable if I'm willing to accept that it's not my circumstances, it's my mind.
I see. Okay, so what are the techniques that are actually used in this type of therapy?
Well, we would need an afternoon workshop for me to go into them fully.
There'd be a lot, yeah.
There are quite a few, but briefly, you can divide them into cognitive, behavioural and emotive techniques.
Okay.
Now, one of the gifts of REBT is it's simple. You don't need academic or tertiary training if you're not cognitively impaired to understand its principles. And one of the offerings in REBT is the ABCs of REBT. And if people are interested either in the book I co-wrote with my husband or practically any of his books, or if you go to my website and one of the pages is self-care and it goes through the ABC.
Yes.
And so one of the techniques answering your question is to go through this. The understanding is Not an event, what we tell ourselves, that creates our emotional disturbance. When we think in rational ways, healthy emotions, irrational ways, unhealthy ones. Yep. And so if we recognize that we're creating an unhealthy emotion, which would include, as I touched on, anxiety, extreme fear, panic, hopelessness, despondency, panic, rage, shame, guilt, jealousy. And if we're wise enough not to want to carry those toxic emotions, then pull out your ABC, write down what happened that seemed, it didn't create the emotion, but it seemed to. So you write it down. A, someone criticized me in a horrible, bullying way.
Yep.
And then go to C, the consequence. One might feel hopeless, depressed, or enraged, whatever the unhealthy emotion is. Then one goes to B and writes down as many irrational beliefs as one can identify that contribute to creating that emotion. Now, what's an irrational belief? Shoulds, demands, musts, catastrophizing, awfulizing, taking life too seriously, low frustration tolerance. Yeah. You know, I must have what I want when I want it, little baby that I am.
Yeah.
damning others and oneself and life when things don't go the way we want them to go.
Yeah.
Blowing things out of proportion. So if we're thinking in any of those ways, we write down the irrational beliefs. Just to insert here, rational thinking, which creates healthy emotions. Now, healthy emotions aren't always happy, but they're appropriate, they're healthy. And they include concern instead of anxiety and panic. Concern will motivate us.
Yep.
Anxiety and panic will debilitate most of us.
Yes.
Healthy grief and sadness and disappointment when someone dies, when we don't get what we want. It's healthy, but hopelessness and depression, not.
No. Yeah, okay.
Healthy anger, which is based on REBT's humanistic nature, where a healthy person presumably has an ethical moral compass. And so healthy anger would be observing or experiencing abuse or brutality, but being in control of one's actions and thoughts, rather than rage, where we react blindly.
Okay.
And healthy anger can motivate us to take sometimes very helpful action in society or in our own lives, but it's not likely to be destructive like rage is. And finally, regret instead of shame and guilt, so we can learn from our mistakes. We're all fallible, REBT reminds us.
Yeah.
And so, but let's try to do the best we can not to screw up. So regret is helpful. Shame and guilt, we're putting ourselves down. It's nasty self-torture.
Yeah.
So I hope that clears up the difference between healthy and unhealthy emotions. And healthy thinking is the opposite of irrational thinking. Rational, we have preferences instead of demands. High frustration tolerance. We can stand what we don't like. We just don't like it. Instead of, I can't stand it.
Yes.
We have high frustration tolerance. A sense of humor. We keep things in perspective. We have no absolutistic thinking or catastrophizing, no awfulizing. And we have unconditional acceptance of self and others and life. Okay, back to the ABC.
Yep.
Write down all of the irrational beliefs you can think of in relation to what happened. And then you go to D and you dispute the life out of them. You know, other cognitive approaches say find out your unhealthy belief and replace it with a healthy one. Well, REBT encourages that, but it goes deeper. It says rather than just, replace, dispute and take away the credibility of the irrational beliefs so they're less likely to come back up. It's the difference between just a bandage and an ointment that really kills the infection and then it's really healthy skin. So you dispute every irrational belief, ask questions like, And again, this is like, you can see it for free on my website, the self-care sheet or page. Where is the evidence for this belief? Is it helping or hurting? Is it logical? Where is it written? And so forth. And then when you finish disputing every one of the irrational beliefs, you come up with healthy new beliefs and philosophies, and you repeat them over and over. So that's one of the main brilliant REBT tools and techniques. There's another one, the shame attacking exercise, very good for people who need the approval of others, who must have people like them, who are afraid of rejection or people criticizing them or abandonment. And so shame attacking exercise, you do something a bit quirky, not dangerous, to get people's attention while telling yourself, well, if they think I'm nuts, that's their opinion. I have worth as I am. And I'll give you an example of that in a moment. But that's really helpful for people who also have shyness or social phobia.
Yep.
I didn't mention three of the core irrational beliefs from which countless others come. I must do well and be loved, liked, approved by everyone. You must treat me well and act the way I think you should. And life should be fair and with justice. Lots of luck, right? So anyway, shame attack. So my husband and I were teaching a workshop. And before the lunch break, we said to the attendees, listen, during lunch, go out and do a shame attacking exercise. If you die, we'll give you a nice funeral, but come back and tell us what happened. And so one guy put a piece of string on a banana and walked down Park Avenue. The Institute was in the richest part of New York City, near Park Avenue, Millionaires Avenue. And so this guy with the banana on a rope walked down Park Avenue dragging the banana behind him. And, of course, people were looking at him rather strangely. And one woman said, what are you doing? And he said, well, can't you see I'm taking my banana for a walk? And she was like, you know. And he felt liberated because it became crystal clear that people's opinions of him say much more about their tendencies to judgment and their preferences and say nothing about his worth. So shame attacking exercise is great. There's rational emotive injury. There's so many. There's cognitive distraction. I don't know how much time you want me to take on this, but there's some of the frequently used ones, and there are others.
Yeah, of course. So let's go back into kind of why do people crave acceptance and, I don't know, like they want to be acknowledged by these people who, like this person walking down the street, it's like you're never going to see that woman probably ever again in your life, means nothing to you. But some people would really take that to the heart and think, I am such a horrible person. Like I'm so stupid, I'm so dumb, I look crazy, she hates me. And then it becomes catastrophized and
it's tragic. And it happens so often. Well, unfortunately, it appears too few people are taught when they're very young to unconditionally accept themselves, to know that they have worth just because they exist. And if you do a naughty thing, there'll be consequences. It's not good to act badly. When you do a bad thing, you're not bad. What you did was bad. And so, unfortunately, it's the unhealthy influence of whoever's bringing a person up, society, school, if they belong to a religious group that has very strict rules about how a person should be, you know, through osmosis, through the media. Fortunately, there are some people lucky enough to have wise, enlightened parents who do teach them that we love you no matter what, but you act that way, you know, there's going to be the consequence. Yeah. There are people like that, but a lot of others have to learn it for themselves and keep applying it. And the good news is, if they do, they keep reminding themselves, I have worth simply because I exist. I'm a fallible human. If I screw up, I can try to do better. And other people are fallible too. Yeah. And I can work on practicing forgiveness and unconditional acceptance if I realize, for whatever reason, as you indicated earlier, either in this recording or when we were talking prior to the official interview, that people there, but for the grace of whatever, go I. And so that's really why it would be wonderful, given that, you know, most parents do the best they can, and they may not have had ideal parents.
Yeah.
So given that, it would be wonderful if schools could teach people that. And, in fact, in Australia and other places, including in America, some cities in America, rational emotive behaviour education is taught in schools.
That's important. I actually do thoroughly think it is so important to teach that stuff at school, because, like you said, parents do the best that they can do. They're doing what they've probably been taught, but that doesn't mean that you can't do better. So I often will look at my life and think, okay, I'm not responsible for what happened to me as a child, but I am responsible for what I do with it now as an adult. So I have to break the cycle. But if I was taught something like that in school, you just never know. Like, maybe you would break the cycle a lot easier, and maybe we wouldn't end up with people making these decisions and kind of, like you said, committing maybe evil acts and ending up in prison, but they're not actually evil.
No one is evil.
Yeah.
Some people do evil things, some people don't, but some people do bad things. Some people do good things. Some people might intend to do no harm, but it's fallible humans.
It's true. Yeah, that happens all the time, doesn't it?
Yeah, even Mother Teresa may have,
I'm sure,
intentionally. I met her, by the way, but that's another story. She was remarkable.
I did. Yeah, you did meet her because you got an award by the Indian Health Board. Was that right? Did I get that right?
Indian Board of Alternative Medicine. Boy, Chantel, I'm impressed. You've done your research.
I've got to do my research. You know, I don't want to come in blind.
You're far from it, and very wise. You know, I'm listening to you now during this interview, and we had a little chat before you were recording it. And
I appreciate you saying that. Thank you.
I want to acknowledge you as a young woman who is dedicating her life to helping other people, and you're using your own pain and what of the past and what you were deprived of to learn and to uplift others. That is commendable. That is beautiful. And I acknowledge you, Chantel.
Thank you. I really do appreciate that. Kind of gets me a bit emotional hearing that, because I'll take my experience then, because when we talk about wanting acceptance and just like you just acknowledging me then, I grew up not feeling that from anyone. And sometimes I wonder if I'm doing the wrong thing when I enjoy that someone gives me that. So sometimes when I do these interviews with people, they will give me that, and they see that there's something more to me than what, you know, someone walking down the street would say. And I wonder, is that a dangerous game I'm playing if I take pride in them saying that? I don't know. I'm confused by it. Like, I don't know if that makes me egotistical to be like, yeah, I enjoy getting acknowledged.
Just the fact that you ask that question indicates that you tend to be quite humble. Okay. Here's what REBT says about that. Again, every human has worth simply because we exist. Some of us tend to want to do more good than harm. It doesn't mean we're more worthy than someone in prison, not at all.
Yeah.
But it's a very good and positive thing that we can be grateful for, that we have that inclination. So REBT would say, enjoy that gift that's part of your nature. Enjoy it. enjoy when people acknowledge you. It doesn't mean you're more special than anyone else. Neither are you less special. So enjoy it. It's probably easier for you to see, like if there's a great athlete. Now, if they've got a big head, I'm special because look how fast I can run. But that's very different from acknowledging, yeah, I worked my ass off in training and I'm happy to say I've achieved these results and it feels good. So take that's it true. In. I don't think you're going to become big-headed because you realize that it doesn't make you superior, but it's important to enjoy the gifts that you have and that you share.
Well, I think I worry more about what other people will think if I – it's more about them. What are they thinking about me enjoying having – I don't know. It's probably me catastrophizing it in a way where I'm making it into something it's not, where I think, oh, my God, it makes me so egotistical that it made me feel emotional that you gave me this acknowledgement that – but I guess we're all starved for that, aren't we? Like, we do want that. Like, everyone wants that.
Well, here's the thing, and by the way, get ready if you want to get emotional – I want to acknowledge you for the courage of disclosing what you're disclosing, because I bet a high proportion of people who are going to watch this, either now or around the time we're recording, which is around the COVID virus 2020 time,
this
will hang around and people may watch it in the future. And your courage in self-disclosure, that a whole lot of people can relate to what you're saying you've experienced and you do experience. And then I'm answering in a way that I hope is helpful. And so you're doing that courageously. By the way, breaks the tendency to worry about what will people think by my disclosing this. And it helps other people. So here's the thing. When a person is wanting to be approved of by others, it's usually an indication that they're not approving enough of themselves. Because we unconditionally accept ourselves, hey, we'll still enjoy approval from others, and why not? But we don't need it to feel good about ourselves. And in fact, the way unhealthy relationships can come about is when people aren't giving it to themselves and they think they need the other person who's giving it to them. Unfortunately, in the honeymoon stages of relationships, there's a lot of moochy, smoochy, lovey-dovey. And then as time goes on, if there's less of that, a person, what's wrong with me? Am I not good enough anymore? Why don't they love me? And it's because there's an expectation, fill me, because that person isn't filling themselves.
So that's why they're dependent on that external source to give it to them, often, to feel worthy.
Often, unfortunately, and again, it comes back to the sooner the better, but if you're alive, it's never too late to start to work on accepting oneself unconditionally.
So do you, and I'm assuming you wholeheartedly believe that, like, it doesn't matter how old you are, you could be 90 years old, it's never too late to accept it. Because I think a lot of people think, when you're dead, no. But when you're, I think a lot of people will go, oh, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. And I'm like, well, what is that?
You can't teach a dog new tricks if the dog doesn't want to learn them.
Yes.
But if the dog realizes these new tricks are going to help me be happier, that doggy might learn them.
So why wouldn't they want to learn them? I interrupted you then, but I was just saying, why wouldn't they want to learn them? If you have the option of being more having more happiness in your life and being more fulfilled where you do it yourself, not an external source, why wouldn't you want that?
I suppose if a person doesn't believe it's true, I think if a person isn't dominated by doubt, or whatever malady they suffer from,
yeah,
then they would admit that they would like that. But some people, you know,
interesting.
With awareness, we have choice. If a person doesn't know they have a choice, well, it's normal that I do this when I'm angry. It's normal. That's what my parents did.
Yeah.
But we don't really have a choice. We don't know how to change. Then,
yeah, what are you going to do? Yeah.
The flavor of, or the manner, the character of REBT is realistic optimism. Underline realistic.
Okay.
So, yeah. Well, if you want to call that positive, yeah, but it's not BS positive, la, 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 just look on the bright side when sometimes there's not a bright side.
It's normal for there not to be a bright side sometimes. Kind of like when you're saying there is a healthy type of anger, and healthy emotions do include being sad and if you're mourning someone.
Yeah.
This whole thing of, like you're saying, this la-di-da version of everything has to be positive, everything sunshine, lollipop, rainbows, just doesn't happen.
Right. And again, one of the gifts of REBT that you don't see in other cognitive approaches, it distinguishes between the healthy and unhealthy, negative, meaning not pleasant emotions.
Yeah.
A lot of approaches just put in one basket the negatives and another the positives. And REBT says there are healthy negatives and debilitating ones. I mentioned them earlier.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like you said then, it's kind of like, okay, feeling sad or feeling angry, well, that's negative, so we'll just put that in the negative pile. But like you said, they can be healthy.
I wrote something, sad isn't bad.
No, it's not. But why do we get told that it is almost? Like if you're too emotional, oh, that's horrible. Like
that's quite, you know, it depends on your culture. It's very Aussie, it's very British, it's some sort of USA-ish. But in other cultures, some of the Mediterranean cultures, they feel, they cry, you know, go to an Italian opera and there's emotion all over the place, you know. So, you know, there's a cultural component as well to consider. But we, if we're aware, can break out of our cultural norm. So if the cultural norm, not meaning it's normal but common, is, and you know, this sort of sexist, men don't show their feelings.
Ah, oh, so stupid. Like, that's, it's just like ridiculous to,
is, right?
Yeah, to think that they wouldn't have these same emotions.
If we're not aware, we're hurting ourselves or we're believing something that's just not true, then what's going to motivate us to change? So interviews like this, books that people write, articles, sometimes, you know, meeting the right person at the right time who'll just say that thing that wakes you up. In all sorts of ways, some humans are lucky enough to wake up to the fact that they're limiting themselves and they can create a happier emotional life, even if their circumstances are really tough.
Okay. So it's not the circumstance. Is it the way you feel about the circumstance,
or is it,
it's the way you think about it, which then leads to the way you feel, like the emotion?
You got it. Our thinking creates our emotions.
Okay, so I'm trying to think of a good example we could use. COVID's probably a really good example. Let's look at COVID-19. Because we hear a lot of politicians coming out using this type of language that creates fear and anxiety in people. I don't know. They're not creating it.
The language of the politician doesn't create it. The person listening creates it. So if a politician says, it's awful and you should be scared, some people are going to hear that and say, oh, shit, it's awful, I should be scared. Another's going to say, well, hang on, it's pretty bad, but let me look for evidence here. And they're not going to be as terrified.
Okay. Yeah, I see how you change that then. Yeah, okay. Because in my feeling, I was like, they're coming out, they're using these emotions, people are freaking out, and then they're doing things like panic buying and whatever else they're doing. But it's not actually that. It's the way that almost they're interpreting it or understanding it.
Exactly. That is what it is. It's the way, it's just like, in a way, we could put on a piece of music and you could be there in your headphones going and you're loving it. And I could be here just crying and crying. And why? Because when you first heard that was one of the best birthdays in your life. And when I first heard, I'm just making this up, maybe that was when I heard someone I adored was dying.
Yep.
So okay. Not the music, but what we tell ourselves when we hear the music.
So is it like, is that the trigger?
The music, yeah, yeah, or the event is yeah. the activating event that leads to us thinking.
Yeah, okay.
That leads to the emotion.
Okay. I've heard you say before that you don't need to spend a lot of time kind of analysing your past or your childhood in order to be emotionally and mentally healthy in the present. So what does that mean to be emotionally and mentally healthy in the present, and then how do we achieve that?
Okay. You ask wonderful questions.
Thank you. I did my research, right?
You did. Well, a lot of people do research before interviews. They don't always ask great questions. So
that's true. I'll take it. Thank you.
REBT certainly acknowledges that we're influenced by our past. You know, that's where we've learned to hate ourselves unless we get A+ for every paper, because that's what we were taught. Or, you know, if we weren't great at sport or didn't look a certain way, we felt not good enough. And, you know, so REBT would initially be interested, okay, what happened that contributed to me believing what I believe in my life right now? So we acknowledge that and have compassion on ourselves.
Yep.
But then enough already, because, okay, all these things might have happened. And no wonder now I'm afraid of people who blah, 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 or this or that, or I'm shy. Or, okay, but here I am alive.
Not fixating.
No, and identifying the irrational beliefs that we learnt, disputing them and replacing them with healthy, rational beliefs, and then indoctrinating ourselves with them till we believe them almost automatically.
Okay, that seems like really quite a confronting thing for people to do.
Well,
like especially to begin with, I think once you see the results, but it must be confronting to actually sit there and go, okay, I'm being irrational. Maybe I'm having my unhealthy irrational thoughts. If I just change the way I'm thinking about it, then my response will be different. Am I getting this right?
Well, that is correct, what you described, but you start by saying it could be confronting. Well, presumably a person wouldn't start thinking about it unless they wanted to change. And really, even That's if true. It's temporarily, ouch, in the short term, it leads to longer term well-being. And in fact, that's easier than hanging on
to
the beliefs of not enough, not good enough, I'll never, and then suffering for the rest of your life. And a whole other area that we don't have time to talk about is the mind-body connection and the tons of research that shows how our emotions contribute to our literal physical health. There are articles in highly scientific journals, one of them the Journal of the American Medical Association, that prove scientifically that people who practice daily gratitude can tend to live 10 to 15 years longer than people who don't. They have stronger immune system, stronger cardiovascular system, less likelihood to develop this, that, and the other. You know, so if we want to live a long and healthy and happier life, which doesn't mean every minute we'll be happy, that would be abnormal. Because usually in life there's some loss, there's disappointment. But with unconditional acceptance, there can still be tranquility despite grief and sadness for a while.
Okay. So then I'm assuming you believe that we have the power then to create our own emotional destinies.
Well, if a person is not cognitively impaired, if they're able to understand the principles that I've shared with you,
yep,
then they have the power and the choice. If someone is in some way disabled, you know, they may not. So humans who are not, you don't have to be a genius, but who have the basic intelligence to understand what we've been talking about, they have the power if they know they do and if they choose to use it to create a healthy emotional destiny, no matter what the outer circumstances. And there have been enough millions of people who've applied REBT that prove that's a fact. I'm not just airy
fairy. Yeah, no. Yeah, there's evidence. There's
research evidence for those people who work it.
Yeah, it's not just going to come, you have to work out.
Make effort. It's not necessarily hard, but you have to do hard work, just ongoing effort. Uh-oh, I'm feeling anxious again. What am I telling myself to create this anxiety? Oh, I have to be the best. Hang on, where is it written I have to? Nowhere. Worst case and I'm the worst, then what? Well, I won't like it, but life will still go on. And we talk ourselves out of the bullshit.
Okay, I get you. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense what you just said then. Because we do often think like that, don't like, well, not everyone, but a lot of people think we've got to be the best and we've always got to be at the top of our game. And it's like if you have a bad day, all of a sudden, like, oh, my God, it's the end of the world. But it's not. You're right. Like, you're still living. Life still goes on. Tomorrow's a new day.
You know, and that's why REBT reminds us, think about your thinking. Yeah. Let an unhealthy emotion trigger the question. Okay, it's not what's going on. What am I telling myself that's creating this unhealthy feeling? And then think it through, dispute it, and come up with a healthy attitude and remind oneself of that.
Why do you think that people struggle with regulating their emotions? Is it that we're not taught how to do that? And so I'm assuming, do we learn that from our parents? And like how they, like, you know, if, what's the example? Like some, one of your parents is trying to open something, they get angry, they chuck a hissy fit. Do we then learn that if you can't do something, that's the reaction?
Well, a lot of people do. Now, some kids
don't
model on their parents. A lot of kids do, because when we're very young, the brain isn't developed to the point where it can discern. Now, is mummy acting in a healthy way? We just take it on. So it's important, you know, we touched on this earlier, not to blame our parents for how we are. Once we are willing to take responsibility for the fact that we create our own stuff. Again, it's really healthy to have compassion on ourselves for the tough times and the unhelpful ideas we believed because we didn't know another way. But then move along and create a great life and then help other people like you're doing.
Okay, because if I talk about myself, sometimes I will find that I will be so focused and so consumed on what happened when I was a child that I'm like, why do I bother trying to help people? But then other days I'm like, no, going through that led to me to be to where I am today, where I am in the position where I can help other people because I know what it's like to feel like that, and I don't want people to feel like that.
Yeah, and you're proof you don't have to stay stuck in that.
So and is it normal to have both of those type of feelings, like I just said?
Humans are born with if they're not impaired, with the tendency to think rationally and irrationally. So we have to learn the difference. If our goal is to think rationally, why? In order to have healthy emotions, healthier body, mind, and live a better life.
It's making a lot of sense to me. I'm having a lot of like aha moments right now.
Good.
Which is great. I was wondering if maybe we could break it down into more specific situations and see how REBT would work in those different scenarios. So like someone being through a traumatic event, how, I guess we've kind of touched on that a bit, but how would that help someone get through if they've got PTSD or they were abused as a child and they just can't move forward? They feel stuck. They don't think they can ever escape it. This is just how their life's going to be. How can they push through that?
Well, in a number of ways, and you know, it's different for different people. It depends on the type of trauma and so on. With PTSD, research has shown that whilst it's understandable that a person who's gone through trauma has been affected, but that if they continue to think in unhealthy ways, they maintain and create and maintain post-traumatic stress.
So are they re-traumatizing themselves?
So some are, it's awful, it's awful, it shouldn't have happened to me. Survivor's guilt, you know, if you're a soldier, my buddy was killed, why am I alive?
Yeah.
And can be telling themselves these irrational, unhelpful thoughts. Now, REBT doesn't suggest, well, tell yourself, it's okay, I got through it. No, but get real, get perspective. The reality is that sometimes in life, really bad things happen.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's abuse when you're a little child. Sometimes it's a tsunami that kills everyone in your village. It's not even a human that did it. Sometimes your loved one, too young, dies from cancer. You know, so remember one of the core irrational beliefs, life should be fair and with justice. In Buddhism, people are reminded, as well as in REBT, life will contain loss and suffering.
Yeah.
So step one is to accept it. And to accept the fact that if one has survived, one can still find meaning in life and find ways to enjoy life. There are stories of people who survived wars, concentration camps, and they went on to live a meaningful life with some joy. Now, they still cried healthy tears thinking about the past, but they focused more on the here and now and what they were grateful for than the abuse of the past. So if we are willing to act on accepting it was so bad, 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 compassion, and I'm still here, and focusing on gratitude every day on what still is good and where there's life, there's hope. And then in the process of healing, choosing to help others, even if it's animals, even if it's being kind to the environment, doing something for others, human, yeah, animal, earth, then healing is possible.
That's quite powerful. Yeah, that really resonated with me, what you were saying then. Yeah. So how about if we take someone who sabotages relationships? So maybe they have a fear of abandonment. Can REBT help them?
Yeah. So the question would be, what are you telling yourself to make yourself afraid of being abandoned? So identify your irrational beliefs, person who's suffering in this way. And they probably include, my life would have no meaning without them. I could never be happy without them. I need them. I need them to show me love. I can't stand being alone. I couldn't survive being alone. I couldn't stand it. It would be awful.
So does this go back to that external, trying to get that gratification from an external source rather than yourself?
That's one thing. Yeah. I am nothing without dot, dot, dot. And then you dispute those ideas. Even if you could tell yourself, I never meet someone I love as much as so-and-so, my life can have meaning in other ways. I love my cat. I love to draw. I love to walk. I love my work. I love to feed others. I don't have to make that person the be-all and end-all of my life. They're a part of my life. Other people have lost their significant others and have gone on to thrive. Some didn't have other partners to replace them. Some had better partners. So, you know, you think this through. Usually people go, oh, I couldn't stand it if. End of story. And then they do everything in desperation to keep. Instead of, I prefer it if, but if it doesn't, I can still have a good life.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's really true. So then, how about if you're a violent offender? Can REBT help them?
It has helped a lot of
people. It has?
Yeah. You know, REBT, I don't know what's happening now, but when my husband was alive, there were people who went into prisons and presented on REBT, and my husband and I would get letters of how incredibly that helped them, or even reading one of the books about REBT. So people who act in violent ways, look, let's not discount a biochemical component.
No, yeah.
Let's not discount psychopathy.
Yep.
Let's not discount people whose part of the brain that controls restraint may not be effectively working.
Yep.
So there is a biochemical component in some, not in all. So, again, it depends. But often a violent action is fueled by rage. And so a person who has violent, see, I don't like the term a violent offender. I like the term a person who's committed violent acts or committed acts of violent offence.
Yeah, no, you're right, because then it's almost like I'm saying that's what they are. Like, it's like when you say they're evil. But they're not evil, they just did an evil act. So absolutely, I get that.
Yeah, I mean, now what you said is common lingo. And another gift of REBT is encouraging us to think about the words that we use and the implications. And you know, most people say these criminals or violent offenders or these rapists or these, you know, and not to dilute the importance of consequences for people who do wrong. Oh, may they have consequences. Not saying, oh, just accept, and if you did that, well, you would do that too. And to desire consequence from a healthy place of understanding and compassion rather than hatred and rage. You know, one of my husband's expressions, hanging on to bitterness and rage is like eating poison and waiting for the other person to die. It actually doesn't hurt the evildoer, hurts you who's hating.
Yeah, that's true. So then how do we change that? How do we change that thing where we think, okay, I'll have the poison but it will kill them, but really how do we let go of that?
Well, so if someone has committed a violent offence, nothing will change them if they don't want to change. So what helps encouraging change? To introducing to them the idea that you can change. What you did, let's explore what you were telling yourself that contributed to you doing that. Now, do you want to believe those things now? I mean, I'm talking in a very general way, Chantel. It's different for individuals, but, you know, REBT, again, when my husband was alive, we not only had general therapy groups but anger groups, which help people accept it's hurting me to hang on to my anger and the behaviour that I perform if I don't work on my unhealthy behaviour. And so then teaching them think about their thinking, dispute, replace.
Okay. Do you think this type of therapy would be really good to be put into prisons to help people be rehabilitated? Like it seems like they need that. I really feel like they need, like there's not enough happening. Even if they are in prison for the rest of their life, they have no chance of getting out. Surely they still deserve the chance to try and understand themselves. And they can still do productive things in prison.
Yes.
You could be in there for life. You could teach someone who comes in, who will be getting out soon, don't come back here. This is what you can do. Change your life. You have the opportunity.
Yeah.
Why aren't these things in prisons?
Because not enough people are doing that. As I said, when my husband was alive, that was being done. Maybe this is something you might do. Maybe it is being done and I don't know.
But, doesn't seem like it is.
Yeah, maybe not. So, hey, put that on your list.
I'll put that on my list. I will.
One of the important things, I think one of the most important things to offer to people who've been imprisoned who might feel guilty or ashamed, and often they do feel that way, is to teach them the importance of unconditional self-acceptance. You have worth. You just did a really bad thing, but you have worth.
And okay, so it doesn't define them. Yes, you raped someone, but we don't have to necessarily just define you as a rapist and you are nothing else.
Right. You did a very bad action.
But it doesn't mean that you're nothing. You choose
not to do that again.
Yeah, okay.
And also it's important, by the way, to teach people who have been raped.
Yeah.
Firstly, unconditional self-acceptance and gradually, if they're willing. And it's possible, but they have to want to. Unconditional acceptance of that other. If that other person wasn't disturbed, they wouldn't have acted the way they acted. That's a bit of a stretch for people. So first, it's important they heal themselves. But, you know, it's not impossible. I mean, there was a case here, and I'm sure there are countless other cases in Australia, but in the USA, just what comes to mind, a few years ago in a church, a young man was accepted into a Bible group and he was there. And then at the end, he didn't even know these people. He shot the pastor and some of the people.
I remember hearing this. It's horrible. Yeah.
In North Carolina. And afterwards, relatives were interviewed and they say, "We forgive him. We forgive this sick boy who did this." So, I mean, that takes a very evolved person, and it's important if someone doesn't immediately forgive a wrongdoer that they don't put themselves down. It's quite understandable. But if they choose, they can work towards it. I'd like to share an example with you, Chantel, if I'm right now, of I was giving a workshop, and often when I do workshops, I do live demonstrations. And long story short, I asked for a volunteer to come up and to bring up their issue, and I do REBT. And okay, so I was talking to psychology students, and it was on a university campus that had beautiful trees. And you'll understand why I'm mentioning that in a minute. And do you know what a banyan tree is? It's kind of very thick trunk, and sometimes it's got a few trunks. In Queensland, they have beautiful banyan trees, and Asia, and in some tropical parts south in the USA here. So anyway, there was a beautiful one outside the window of the room I was teaching in, and so anyway, a man volunteers, and he was one of the older students, probably in his late 30s or early 40s, and he had been imprisoned and got out and decided he wanted to help other people. And so he was studying, and he'd studied the principles of REBT, and he said, "Look, I understand it here. I get it, but I'm not feeling it here." And he shared that when he was younger, you know, he was using a whole lot of substances and drinking a lot, and he committed a crime, and he ended up being imprisoned for that for some years. And now the good news is he kind of used that to fuel his idea of helping others not succumb to addiction and so on. But so he said to me, and I get what you say about the importance of unconditional self-acceptance and not feeling ashamed and guilty, but I still feel ashamed and guilty about the pain that my loved ones experienced as a result of what I did and as a result of my being in prison. And I'm not achieving unconditional self-acceptance. Well, an effective therapist listens very well. And earlier I'd had a conversation with this man and I learned that he loves nature. And so an effective therapist uses what they can. Okay, so he expresses what he expressed. And then I sort of make a segue and I say something like, by the way, you know, I noticed that banyan tree out there, you know, we're talking earlier how much you love nature and trees and all. And that tree, it seems to be like it's really old. It has a lot of parasites. And I noticed students have carved stuff into the tree trunk. And there are people maintaining the grounds of this campus. Beautiful, you know, there's a pond and ducks and beautiful plants everywhere. And I was saying, don't you think it would be good if that old tree was removed and they replaced it with a healthy young one? Looking at your face, Chantal, I think you're already getting one of them. And he immediately goes, no, it's a beautiful tree. I love it. I often sit underneath it. I said, it's so imperfect, you know, and it's got these parasites. And you could sit under a younger, healthier tree. And he's vehement about it. No. And then I said to him, are you any less a part of nature than that tree? And he got it. And the tears, you know. And he realized that he doesn't have to have been perfect or be perfect to have worth in this world.
Yeah.
That he is worthy of unconditionally accepting himself, including the errors, the mistakes that he made in his past. He really got that.
That's so, yeah, that is so powerful. Because you're right, what is perfect anyway?
Well, REBT asserts there's no absolute perfection.
That no.
Really unrealistic, and if you can disprove that, I'm interested. But
yeah, I don't think so. Don't think I can disprove that.
Nor is there any certainty. Now, there's a very high probability we're all going to die one day.
Yes,
but we don't know what scientific development might happen in our lifetime. That's
true.
Why I say a high probability, very high.
Yeah.
Apart from that, really, what is certain? And this time of COVID has put that fact in our face.
Actually, that's very true. Yeah, we're learning that a lot. When I was doing my research, I did read criticism and I think a lot of misconceptions about REBT. Some of the things I came across, people saying it's too simplistic, it doesn't deal with the underlying issues, and that it blames the person with the mental illness. Now, I didn't get that feeling when I did my research, and I can tell by your reaction that that is so wrong.
It's
what
so
is
wrong.
The biggest misconception that you really want to clear up right now so that people actually understand it?
Well, it's interesting. Some people think that if something works effectively in a brief time, it's too simple. Okay, torture yourself. Find a technique that takes forever.
Yeah.
One of the gifts of REBT is that it can be so effective. And in terms of it being simplistic and not deep enough, I did that demonstration with that guy.
That is deep.
It went to the core of what he was doing to create his shame. Does he need years of therapy if you can just ask the right question? So REBT, in my opinion, is one of the most deep therapies, but it's effective, and for many who don't have psychosis or other more complicated comorbidities, you know, for them it's still effective. It will take more time. But for others who, you know, have healthy common neuroses rather than psychoses, it goes deep briefly and you don't have to do years of therapy. And so that is one of the gravest misconceptions.
Yes, because it goes straight, like it seems to be a real no BS, direct approach, get straight to the source.
But with compassion, that's what I love about it. It's not just up here. It's real up here and real here as well.
Okay. It's the full body of everything. Like you said, the mind, the body, the everything.
Holistic.
Yeah. It's brilliant. I actually really enjoyed looking into it because I didn't know a lot about it.
Well, thank you for being part of spreading the gift of it, if that's what you're going to choose to do through your interviewing and through your beingness.
Yeah, I actually think this is a brilliant thing to incorporate in the rehabilitation program that I'm attempting to create, and this is why I'm interviewing people. Thank you so much for talking to me. I know I've taken about an hour and a half of your time. I thoroughly enjoyed this chat. Yeah, I don't even really know what to say. I've actually really enjoyed it. I feel like I've learned quite a lot about myself and just how powerful the way of thinking can be.
It's been a delight meeting you. It's been my pleasure to participate in this interview. As I said before, you've asked wonderfully helpful questions, I think, for people who are going to view this, because I think a lot of them would, in their own mind, have the questions that you've asked, and that's what makes a brilliant interviewer.
Thank you.
And or someone who interviews in a brilliant way.
Yep.
Well, thank you. And again, I've observed and I feel that by your presence alone, you emit a kind of stable, healing, compassionate energy that already can impact a person. And then through the interviews and the work that you do, you give material for people to use their minds and learn, and that can give them choices and help them create better lives for themselves. So, again, good on you, Chantel, for the wonderful work you're doing. Keep it up. And
that's, you know, very kind of you to say. Yeah, very kind. And I feel very honoured that you're saying that to me, because I am aware of your work. And so,
I'm very sincere. For people who can afford to, buy one of my husband's books, you know, paperback. They're a few dollars through Amazon.
You can get them everywhere. Well,
if they don't want to buy a book right now, you can go to my website, and on the articles page, there are little things I've written for Psychology Today, including today, a new one. There are some video interviews. Perhaps when you send me this link, I'll add this to those interviews.
Perfect.
And the self-care sheet is on my website. So there are resources even for people who can't afford to pay for anything.
Absolutely. And I'll put all those links in the description of the podcast for everyone to be able to find them, because I actually looked through them as part of kind of my research for this interview. Yeah. And it was so interesting.
Much love to you, Chantel, you too. Whoever is viewing this. And remember, we have the power to create our emotions. Let's cherish the gift of life and the potential we've got to make it a good one, no matter what our circumstances.
Perfect way to end it. Perfect. Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
And I hope I'll speak to you again, I'm sure.
We'll speak again, I'm sure.
Perfect. Yes. Thank you very much.
Bye, Chantel. Bye.
Thanks for listening. So until next time, be the change the world needs. But for now, school's out, class dismissed.